The song was called Felicia.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like our man is ready. And so we'll say goodbye and hand turn over the airwaves to San Juan. Once you kill him.
Much has been made recently about the supposed economic recovery. A few blips and a few statistics, and many believe our troubles are all over. Of course, they have to redefine recovery as jobless to account for the lack of improvement on Main Street. But the banks have money, Wall Street is chugging along, and the administration would like to get on with other agendas. They have even set up a commission to investigate the crisis as if it were all in the past. Is that Americans are still losing jobs, the Fed is still inflating, and more regulations are in the works that will prevent jobs and productivity from coming back.
Papa let the sun just begin his first grade. Canada, sweet, sweet Canada, please don't leave me alone, my home away from home. Oh, Canada.
Instead of reversing course,
Raptors, Blue Jays playing in the center. In my red and white, damn, I have to enter. Big up on the preacher, big up on the teacher.
It was an entirely different sense at that time. Brian Mulroney was the prime minister. He had taken a very strong stand on South Africa, which is widely admired. We were giving much greater percentage of our GNP to foreign aid, which was widely admired. We refused to be swept into Reagan's Star Wars apparatus, which was widely admired. The go from ambassador to ambassador and talk about a range of issues which were consistent with Canada's legacy. But the fact, for example, that we have withdrawn largely from peacekeeping around the world, when that was the great inheritance of Lester Pearson, that also told against us. When you go to the Security Council, you have to have positions which will make your entry legitimate and valuable.
The value of the dollar is going to continue to drop, and those Americans who understand where we are headed feel hopeful.
The really major factors at play were, number one, that our policy on climate change, particularly coming out of Copenhagen last year, was fraught with hostility from other countries. They see us as a country that is not doing anything about global warming, which is so important to so many states around the world. The fact that we decided to freeze foreign aid from 2010 to 2014 was considered very negatively by the countries of the world. Even the maternal and child health activity at the G8 was seen as highly opportunistic. After all, if you spend as much money on 3 days for security as you do on a five-year plan, then it's not likely to be taken too seriously. The fact that we cut off NGOs with whom the government disagrees, we cut off money to the international aid AIDS vaccine initiative. We cut off money to the International Partnership on Microbicides. All of this spreads through the international community. The Africa Union had a summit at the end of July. You can be sure that Africa was talking about the fact that so many countries had been removed from the roster of support from CETA. All of this goes against Canada. It's a cumulative impact. I think that the government has to recognize that the absence of a consistent, coherent, and thoughtful foreign policy doomed Canada's chances at the UN, and there's no way around that.
You will be in violation of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code, no matter what your purpose is. Unlawful assembly.
All right, we're here. CKLN 88.1 FM. It's 8:15. We're a few minutes late. There's obstructions downtown. If you're not aware, watch out for the obstructions. Multiple in directions, directional everywhere. CKLN 88.1 FM. My name is Shannon. This is Plunder News. Special guest VJ Sharma in the studio, in the office, in the studio again. Glad to have you down. Let's see if I get your mic up. Say hello. Oh, not hearing you. Try another mic.
Here hello, Shannon.
There you are. You're here.
There we are. Okay.
How you doing this morning?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, very good. Thank you. Nice to have you down. Anything off the top you want to say?
There's a bit of an echo I'm getting. I don't know if there's a couple of things that are on there. Maybe shut off some of the... There's a whole bunch of noise going on in the background.
Oh, yeah, well... That's just those... That's what's happening outside. Bicycle... No, there's actually runners, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of runners going down... University Avenue. Yeah, there we are.
I found the right mic. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay, that's what it is. It was coming off this mic.
Yeah.
Ah... My mic sounds nice, check one. My mic sounds nice, check two.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, glad to have you down. VJ Sharma is in the middle of a mayoralty race, and he's slugging it out with the corporates from below. And how's it going? Positive on the trail at the moment?
Fairly positive. A little bit slow, but fairly positive. I'm getting emails trickling in. The odd phone call trickling in, a few invitations trickling in. But I am taking a fairly hardcore stance when it comes to this city. And yet my intel from, you know, people across the board says that we're not really interested in this election. We're pretty turned off by Smitherman, pretty turned off by Ford, pretty turned off by the whole process. And so I'm hoping to capture some of that vote of people that don't like this instead of not voting at all. Express your dissatisfaction with the system vicariously by voting for me because I'm very detailed in my dissatisfaction. So we'll see. I know that a lot of people know, you know, who I am, what I'm up to. But I also know that I've been testing my ideas for about a year since July of 2009. Things like men should defend this country on behalf of women, children, and the elderly. Just an interview the other day on with Richard Brinkman's CI activist group in Edmonton, where you know I made the point that there's a lot of things that people will say, you know, you go, I'm glad you're saying it, but they won't necessarily say. So all the people I know, all the activists I know, and even the average people I know say, yeah, it'd probably be a good idea if men would man up and defend this country from corporate corruption on behalf of women, children, and the elderly, who can also, you know, obviously contribute. But just because they're happy I'd say it doesn't mean that they want to say it. So you get this thing where there's a bunch of people that are sort of fans of the fact that you're taking a hardcore stance, but because they're not that hardcore, they're not necessarily in the frame of mind to, you know, to say the same thing. So I'm not complaining. It is what it is. I know where I live. I know this is our city. I'm not trying to say the right things to get elected. I'm trying to say the right things to stop big corporations from poisoning us, brainwashing us, and from stealing our stuff. And so that's my issue. But yeah, you can check out whatyouwantabelievein.com for my campaign platform. That's just one of the ideas out there. But the bottom line is, it's going well. But I'm probably not going to win. But if I get a good chunk of votes, it'll certainly show the system that a good chunk of us know what's going on and are not satisfied with the options we're being given.
It's going to be like 40 names on the ballot.
Supposedly, yes, 39 of us or 40 of us that are running for mayor.
Yeah, so Vijay Sharma or Sarma will be at the near the bottom there, I guess. Eh? And any number of votes, like just to register something, because it's the choice of. I see Ford as being a Harrisite, Mike Harris kind of politician, and I see Smitherman as being a McGuinty type of politician. So if you're looking for that kind of policies or those policies, that's where the vote, that's, you know, who to vote for. And of course, Pantalone is representing Mayor Miller, sort of continuation of existing policies, which, may not be a good idea. But yeah, all the fresh ideas seem to lie on Vijay Sharma's side. So that's where, any vote's going to be good there. It's going to be sending a message. And my old man was, telling me I'm going to have to vote for Smitherman because, you don't want to let Ford in there. He's really going to screw things up.
Well, absolutely. The thing is that I called this shot maybe about a month ago, before the actual poll of 1,000 people put Ford in the lead at 40% and Smitherman at around 25%. And, I basically made the point in an interview that with youtube.com/supportlocalscene, Stilsa Productions, that they were going to use Ford. The system, the establishment, was going to use Ford to scare the crap out of the left and force them to vote for Smitherman. And that, he was probably the long-predicted front runner. I think both of them are corporate candidates who will do what the powers that be behind the scenes tell them. But certainly Smitherman being the more veteran politician, he's put in more of his time into the system. I think the system wants to reward him for the hard work he's done. Helping to steal $1 billion for his friends from eHealth and helping to introduce the Gardasil vaccine back in 2007 when he was the Ontario Minister of Health. So, it's a type of thing where I think that your old man is making a point that a lot of people are making, which is that, people really don't want, Ford, or they really don't want Smitherman. And so they're going to hold their nose and vote for either candidate. And I'm saying, if you're going to hold your nose and vote for any candidate, you can vote for me. Even if you don't like me, at least you can respect where I'm coming from. And you can say, you know what? I don't come from there. Almost nobody in Toronto or Canada, comes from there in a really hardcore, sort of, we have to get things done in this country. We can't just live with the fact that the kids are messed up. We can't just live with the fact that, we're losing our purchasing power and prices are going up. We can't live with the fact that we don't save any money anymore. Rising energy prices this winter. And as a system that's corrupt and that's not giving us many options. So if you're going to hold your nose, instead of holding your nose and pointing at Ford or Smitherman, hold your nose and point at the system that gave you Ford and Smitherman or Mayor Smitherford to choose from and vote for Vijay Sharma for mayor and make sure your dissatisfaction with the status quo is understood by the establishment.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And I'm itching that way, not just as a due to the personal connection, but for those very same reasons that you mentioned. It's you got to say no to the system. The system is just too blah. Right now they just seem to be sort of waffling and not doing much. It's like let's try and say as little to sort of upset the balance at the moment. And, nobody's really has any strong platform or issue for that matter. But Vijay's really stepping up. I really like the fluoride in the water issue. Fluoride just seems to be a problem. And just recently on the national front, the federal government has banned bisphenol A, which is a very positive step. I'm sure you could jump all over that, eh?
Absolutely. Bisphenol A is leaked by plastic water bottle or plastic bottles, plastic toys, and it's on the inside liners of cans. It's a chemical that leaks estrogen, and that excess chemical estrogen, artificial estrogen, is turning guys into girls and girls into breast cancer victims, among other ill effects. And the Canadian government, I mean, there's a CBC special called The Disappearing Male back in February that talked about how the male sperm counts dropped by 85%. There's millions of fewer boys and 200% increase in male genital birth defects. And there's a reason why we're not as, you know, aggressive about being, quote unquote, screwed as we should be. And bisphenol A is certainly one of them. And the Canadian government, you know, recently the CBC had a story in August saying 90% of Canadians from the age 6 to 79 are contaminated with bisphenol A, detectable levels in their urine. And then more recently on October 13th, the CBC had an article saying that the Canadian government declared bisphenol A to be a toxic substance. So it's officially now finally recognized as a toxic substance after articles worldwide have talked about this gender-bending chemical, you know, messing with our structure, our DNA, who we are. And yet, it wasn't banned as far as I know. It was just declared toxic. And in the same article, you know, people said that it still may be a few years before it's removed from circulation. But one of my key campaign platforms is stop big corporations from poisoning us. And if I'm mayor of Toronto, then we will test everything in this city. The exact same way City TV, CP24, the CBC, you know, these guys randomly go to a grocery store, grab a bunch of products and say, is something in this bad for you? We took this to a lab and tested it and we found. And so there's news stories like this all the time. Why can't our massive city bureaucracy test things in our environment, find out what's, you know, what's poisoning us and what's causing, you know, 40% of us to get cancer, according to the big cancer charities out there that are sponsoring all these runs and so on, and then come up with solutions like, you know, ban it from this city, take everything that's imported into this city out of those bottles, put it in different bottles. Just an awareness campaign with respect to, you know, smarter choices. Because if we make smarter choices in this city, then we'll get better choices to make because the market will be forced to react to that. And this has happened worldwide, Shannon. This is pretty normal. You've heard about bovine growth hormone. People got rid of that. You know, there's been recent debates over whether you're allowed to drink unpasteurized milk. And a court case in Guelph recently, allowed a farmer to continue as opposed to shutting them down. So this is all pretty normal stuff, man. All you do is inform your neighbors and then bug your elected officials. And then they change the legislation and you're in business.
Yeah, I had some corporation on the street just jamming free samples of X-brand chewing gum in my hand. Even before I put the thing in my mouth, you know, God damn, forbid that. Aspartame. I was like, wait a second. Shouldn't you be handing out pamphlets telling me not to eat aspartame? And you know, who gives the corporation access to the street? Like, shouldn't you have a permit to do this? You know, like, something's wrong. It's upsetting. And there's, you know, back to the issue of research. The research is on the internet right now. It's there. It's, you know, you just need to get a body of people to say, let's stop this, you know, like bisphenol A. I don't understand that, you know, that should be stopped now. I can't wait 2 years for that.
Absolutely. Well, it's in baby bottles. I mean, it's messing with our kids. This is one of the reasons I'm running, Shannon, for mayor. People sometimes say, you know, why are you running? I don't look at I mean, I've been looking at the city for the last, you know, couple of years. I had my radio show here at CKLN before I started running. Not allowed to run for office and broadcast over our public airwaves. It's not allowed during the campaign. So I'll probably be back on after the election unless I win. But I'm running because I get the sense that we are through some fault of our own, but not, you know, more fault of, you know, other people. We are getting worse at dealing with these issues. You know, this stuff is in the paper all the time. Like you can open up a newspaper. They're not even hiding it anymore. You know, mercury and high fructose corn syrup, which is in all the sweet, sugary vitamin waters and all the drinks out there. You know, every one of us, every adult in Toronto, I think, knows something about how we're being poisoned by big corporations. and how, you know, they're not stopping on their own. They're not being stopped by governments. And the handful of groups out there, you know, aren't powerful enough to stop them without public support. So one of the reasons I'm running for mayor is to sort of take a stand. And you know, people say, you crazy? And I'm like, look, this isn't American Idol. You know, I'm not trying to sing the best song. I'm not trying to charm my way into office and just be like the hip young brown guy that knows, you know, all the right things to say to people. Shake hands, kiss babies, and then kiss some corporate butt and then squeeze in there. Because then we're all going to get poisoned by bisphenol A. So I would rather run and say we're getting poisoned by bisphenol A and say the people of Toronto have to take a stand. And if people of Toronto go, you know, whoa, that's pretty crazy, then I'll just say, you know, is it crazy that they're doing it? Or is it crazy that I'm saying it? Or is it crazy that we're not doing something about it? And through that, you know, dialectic process, you know, you'll figure out what's going on. And hopefully, if not by October 25th, certainly the next few months, my campaign will have a positive impact on getting us moving on taking care of some of these issues.
Yeah, let's drop some websites. I don't have the information in front of me. I'm sorry, I'm a little disorganized due to that obstruction out there.
You were obstructed. No.
No problem, really. But I did, it just did set me off and around, you know, made me late. Now I'm disorganized. You got a website? Sorry, can you mention them quick?
I do. My websites are whatyouwanttobelieveein.com. That's my main campaign website. You can also check my blog, blackkrishna.blogspot.com, which is a stage name I use. And one of the reasons I use that stage name, Shannon, I mean, it started years ago. I wrote a poem, and then I performed on stage, and I made music, and as a rapper and a singer, it's kind of fun having a stage name. But one of the main reasons I use a stage name, Black Krishna or BK, sometimes, is that people kept saying to me, you know, Veej, don't talk about this stuff. Veej, don't talk about this stuff. You know, and I just said, I want to get good at talking about this stuff, and I want to talk about this stuff, and I want to talk about it in a way that's not, you know, traditionally politely Canadian, you know, which I can, you know, if I'm at a party and I happen to bring it up, I can talk about it for 30 seconds and have people go, oh, interesting, you know, or whatever. But I want to talk about it in a revolutionary way. And since a lot of my family and friends and other people didn't want me to talk about it, VJ to talk about it, I sort of developed a persona that would allow me to talk about it, kind of like Marshall Mathers and Eminem. When he wants to say crazy stuff, he's on stage as Eminem or Slim Shady. And when he wants to be, you know, Marshall and just be real chilled out, then he can do that too. And so what it's done is it's allowed me to think about these issues in ways that other people haven't, where, you know, other people may want to be entertaining about this stuff or learn about this stuff. I want to get out there, and I want to get all Canadians, men, women, children, the elderly, informed, and then I want to get all Canadians in the active process of doing something to fight for their future. Because at this point, man, I got to tell you, I'm pretty sure we all know there is some sort of conspiracy out there to screw us. And so what we do about it and how we react to it will be important.
Yeah, there's probably not going to be that much difference between the two politicians that seem to be front runners at the moment. And we do need it. We do need it, a real change. You know, I don't like to use that word. It seems to be a little overused. But
well, there's a bigger picture, Shannon. The powers that be, the New World Order, the forces behind globalization want to accomplish rapid changes in our culture. And we can see that going on right now, and the bisphenol A is part of that. They want to feminize us so we don't fight back as guys, and they want to hypersexualize women, and you know, and they want to make a lot of changes. And so how do they get us to go along with them? Well, there is a programming process, you know, television programming and so on. There is a psychological indoctrination process which involves incrementally adjusting us to the idea of accepting change. Now, we're pretty happy. We're pretty chilled out. We got a great country. We got great people. You know, we still have a great place to live. There's nothing, you know, you can be downtown. You don't have to worry about bombs, you know, dropping on you or being mugged or police state checkpoints or, well, we got it good in this city. So how do you get a bunch of people who have it good worldwide to get used to the idea of big changes? Well, you promote the word change and the idea of change everywhere, and you'll see advertisements out there saying transform your life and transform your thinking, and politicians who have always screamed change because, of course, that's what they always do. But the fact that it's more promoted now than ever is because there are bigger changes going on that that you know, the powers that be evil want us to accept. And the use of the word change and other, you know, sort of similes and adjectives and similar words, you know, conditions our minds to accept that.
And there's that whole segment of the population that just seems to be asleep at the wheel, in that, you know, they just let the change happen in the background of their existences, just letting, you know, like nothing's going on. But yeah, it's a constant. It's been going on for a very long time. I want to just drop a voice here on you. It's a Paul Craig Roberts. He's back in the day kind of voice. Let's hear what he has to say quick. It just runs a minute.
I love Paul Craig Roberts.
Let's see. Oh, turntable.
What we can say about the G20 is that it showed two things. One, that the rest of the world is losing faith in the dollar as reserve currency, because this was what was on the minds of most of the people there. And we have to do something about this. We need some alternative way of settling international transactions. Now, the behavior of the police shows, again, the militarization of the police, because they were very aggressive toward people who weren't causing any trouble. And I believe the police were, frankly, disappointed that there wasn't more trouble for them to beat up on. And so they, on their own, went into neighborhoods with their new weapons or protest suppression systems and just sort of arbitrarily abused people. So it's a further indication that the police agencies of the government are now separate from people that they're supposed to protect.
Yeah, there's some change that actually happened pretty rapid, like an overnight change there. I never seen a Gestapo, or maybe I shouldn't use that word. Excuse me. I don't want to use that word. A militarized Toronto police officer like that. I'd never seen the face shield and the riot gear. There's the word I needed to throw out. And then again, yeah, 98% of the population just sleeping on it, like nothing happened. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, this is part of our culture, right? I mean, we have a fairly quiet culture here. On the cops, you know, I agree, but they didn't go to Walmart and buy that riot gear. You know, they were given all those toys and they were given those orders. And you know, within the construct of what you're ordered to do, how you conduct yourself is something that you can be judged on. So there were definitely some cops that acted very, very poorly and maliciously and violently. But you can't get away with that in a militarized system, as you suggest, which I agree with, unless your boss wants you to, unless your boss is okay with it. So if there are soldiers in Iraq or at Guantanamo Bay or Abu Ghraib or Afghanistan that are committing atrocities, you know, if their bosses didn't want it, then they'd be court-martialed. They'd be punished. If their bosses were okay with it, then it would continue. But I was at Dundas Square yesterday with my colleagues at Toronto Truth Seekers, hanging out there for a bit, and there was a guy, a crazy drunk, sort of Christian, I guess. I don't want to insult Christians. This guy was really just a jerk using Christianity as an excuse, who was being very, very violent towards the table of Muslims near there. And there was a crowd gathered, and I'd stopped this guy before, and he was drunk the last time I'd videotaped, pulled out my camera, and eventually, you know, calmed him down after finishing filming him for 5 minutes. But the reason I bring this up is that there was a couple of cops nearby who were working some sort of, you know, festival thing going on there. And I got one, and then he called his buddy, and then the cops came, and the cops took the guy away. And there was a spontaneous applause from the assembled crowd of about, you know, 50, 60 people there at the sort of peaceful way the cops, you know, defused the situation. So in our culture, I mean, I've always said, I figured out, if we had men, we wouldn't need cops, because guys would just man up. Like, you know, Shannon, you would say, hey, this guy stole my bike. VJ, can you help me out? And I'd be like, sure. And then he goes, great. We just need, what, 3-4 more people? That'd be 6-7 of us. And we'll just go to that guy's house and we'll say, dude, you got to give Shannon his bike back or we're going to kick the crap out of you. And the dude would look at us and go, oh, okay, here's your bike. Sorry about that. And you know, then we'd say, don't do that again. And we could do that. And that's sort of old world cultures. That's how things went down for hundreds of thousands of years. In our culture, because we're not allowed to do that, we do need the cops. And so we've got to make sure that, that they act right. And that's an active process. But I shared that story just to remind us that, you know, as awful as they were during the G20, sometimes when you need a cop and they do the right thing, you know, we're all happier for it.
Yeah, there is some of the old school left in the police officer. They used to be public servants, and before they've been sort of pushed into this militarized vein. I'm just going to drop one more quote here from Paul Craig Roberts. While I'm doing it, I was just going to mention, I thought it was kind of curious, the command post for the militarized police officers was like, 50, 100 miles away? You know, like it wasn't even in Toronto, it was like outside. It's like, I just see that as being preparation for the, preparation for like a, some kind of future operation.
Well, off the record, I had 60 years worth of cop as they identified themselves at a second cup tell me and a journalist friend that they thought the G20 commanders were drunk for the crap that they were being ordered to do, because it was 5:30 in the morning. There's a dozen of them on bikes, and they get a little, you know, thing going, make your way to this location right now. This is supposed to be some crazy ish going down. And so they biked, huffed and puffed, 5:30 in the morning. They get all the way down there. They stop. And then they're like, what's happening? And then they just get the thing in their earpieces going, good job, good time. You know, nah, don't worry about it. Nothing's going on. And the cops are all pissed off. Like, why are you making us do these crazy things? So, you know, it's the type of thing where, Shannon, if we expose this, then I'm sure the cops will be happier for not being ordered to do stupid stuff by crazy people.
Yeah, it's very irrational. It's the only word for it, actually. Okay, I'm going to drop this quote. Whoop, what happened? Oh, there it is. It's there already. Play.
The rising police state is already a product of losing the law, or the protective features of the law. That automatically gives you a police state. And in addition, we've had all the fear engendered by 9/11. And this fear was used for an even heavier assault on the Bill of Rights, the assault on habeas corpus, which prevented indefinite detention without charges. We've lost that right. All the due process rights, all the procedural rights that make it possible to enforce civil liberties. You can tell somebody they have a right, but if you take away the procedural mechanisms by which that right's enforced, they don't have the right.
Yeah, and we're living that. That's the result of, 9/11, G20 combined, billions of dollars. And just to take it back right to the beginning of my show, our prime minister throwing some, you know, a few million at Africa as some kind of gesture, and then, you know, breaking the bank, like, I mean, seriously, in terms of militarizing our cops again.
I think the G20 martial law was Toronto's version of 9/11. You know how everything changed? Like, I mean, they built a half a concentration camp worth of fence in downtown Toronto for no reason. I mean, nobody got close to that thing. You know, it was just there, and the cops were sort of using it at the time as a giant barricade between them and the city. It was almost like a fence, a moat, an armed sort of protectorate around the Royal Bank and the Royal York Hotel. So, you know, we can see who's one of the groups behind the scenes pulling the strings, and the Queen's Masonic Honor Guard sort of guarding that, you know, down there just north of Union Station. The whole thing was crazy, and cops will tell you it was crazy, and people will tell you it was crazy if, you know, they're compelled to. But I also saw, Shannon, how our happy go lucky culture took about 3 days to forget what happened at the G20. Because I'm actively paying attention to sort of what the vibe is on the streets and what the chatter is and the buzz is, much like the elite are with the, you know, the cameras everywhere and spying on us online, checking our emails and phone calls. You know, there are people that are paying attention to what's happening in our culture in order to better understand it and influence it. And I am one of those in my own sort of small way and you know, with my work. But they want to tell us that they can sneak into our rooms late at night and molest us, and then the next day tell us to run along and play like children. And so one of my goals as mayor, if I become mayor or if I continue my campaign, if the next mayor doesn't do a good job and try and force a recall, is to make sure G20 martial law never happens again. Expose, false flag terrorism. Expose provocateurs, like the Black Bloc provocateurs who are allowed to break all our stuff and break the cop stuff. Get our culture used to the idea that governments will pull this stuff. Because I got to tell you, Shannon, if there's a bunch of bank robbers hiding in the bushes and they're about to rob a bank, if we point at them and we say, they're bank robbers, they're hiding in the bushes and they're trying to rob that bank, it's a lot harder for them to do. And so it's the same principle with the way our culture is being poorly managed into scaring us and confusing us into accepting it.
Yeah. About that wall, I just
dude, if there was a car, a big car full of explosives, or if there was an airplane or something flying towards the summit, they could have used big guns to shoot it out of the sky. Yeah. They didn't need to build a fence there. They had a bunch of cops there. Most of the protesters didn't even get close to the fence because it was too impenetrable. They were kettled at Queen and Spadina and so on. So the idea of that fence was grotesque, and yet that fence only cost like $11 million of the $1 billion in security, $500 million of which the RCMP got, according to the real news, and yet the RCMP and the feds and the G20 world government role in all this isn't being investigated as much as the cops. And yet smart people will tell you they don't think that Chief Bill Blair was in charge of this. They don't think that the police chief was in charge of what happened to the G20. So, those of us who are investigating this should also make sure we look beyond our local police to see who's giving them orders.
Yeah, it's sort of a little stretch here, but I'm thinking about pushing that wall out. Like, one of the issues that isn't being talked about by our corporate candidates is, this is sort of a psychological wall, a toll for the roads in the cities to get into the city.
Don't we already complain about how much it sucks to drive in Toronto? I mean, come on.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, where should the wall be? Should it be on the 416 barrier, or should we try and incorporate the 905 into the 416 in terms of, say, a toll? Because I just, it seems to need to happen. I've noticed how other cities in the world have dealt with traffic problems. Say, like, what is the biggest? Is Rome. The city of Rome actually went and passed a law many years ago now. The last digit on your license plate, you could drive one day if you were odd, and then the other day you would have to be even. And then they allowed commercial plates all every day. But there needs to be something done.
This is part of the larger UN Agenda 21 kind of idea of, getting us to stop driving, to live in smaller, basically the sustainability idea. Use less now so you have more for the future. I don't know, Shannon, all these same politicians, corporate candidates included, talked about how much waste there was at City Hall. And so I don't think we need toll roads. I think if we just cut that waste, we'll have enough money.
Yeah, no, I know there's definitely ways to deal with it. The toll seems to be more of a symbol. I guess I'm, equating it to the police wall that was in the middle of downtown. Just a bizarre place to put it.
It's a slap in the face. These guys, it's almost because we don't want it, because we hate toll roads. If they can get us to accept them, it's like, if Shannon, if I slap you in the face and you do nothing, then I might be able to kick you in the crotch. And then if you do nothing, I might be able to take all your stuff and I may even be able to kill you. So there is a progressive sort of, beating the dog syndrome where, we kind of, throw up our hands and go, oh, my God, this is so terrible. Toll roads. Oh, high taxes. Oh, they're raising energy prices. That's why I want people to vote for me. Check out whatyouwanttobelievein.com. You can agree with, you can disagree with some of the things I say, but if you're pissed off at the choices we're being given by our system, then I'm trying to help you express that by voting for me and saying, you know what, screw you guys. I'm not dealing with the crap I'm being fed by the corporate media. I'm not just going to be forced to hold my nose and pick a corporate candidate because I'm scared of a different corporate candidate. I'm actually going to say, you know what, we want better choices. Even if we don't want to get that involved, when we do get involved every few years, we want to make sure that we get some legitimate choices so that we can not worry about it later.
So you're talking citizen responsibility in that Well, I mentioned last time you were here, you mentioned a participatory democracy.
That's right. I'd like us to spend an hour a week or so in touch with our city employees and elected officials. Honestly, Shannon, it's the same thing everywhere. We're not reinventing the wheel. I was interviewed by Richard Brinkman in Edmonton the other day. He's going out there postering and flyering, you know, like a maniac during his election to let people know about 9/11 and other issues and what candidates feel about them because he's asking them. But the point is that it's always the same thing. You know, inform your neighbors, agree on specifics, and then petition your government for redress. It happened in 1776. And then when you do that, if your government will either say yes and give you some concessions, or if they say no, it will expose, you know, how corrupt they are. And then, you know, you can take, you know, further steps based on, you know, the new information that you found. But it's the exact same thing it's always been. It's not in style, but our corporate media is not going to promote it for us. We just got to think of our families and our friends and our loved ones and think of, you know, we have to have faith in people. Ultimately, not thinking we can do anything is not having faith in ourselves and not having faith in other people. And that's dangerous. I myself, even, you know, whether I get a lot of love or a little love, I always think that I can get more, and I always think that we can show more for each other and for our city. So I keep pushing, and it keeps me in a great mood. And I know that the people that are the least optimistic about this are in fact not in as good a mood because of their fatalism, because of their lack of faith in people around them and where they live. So to maintain your optimism, your faith in other people and humanity, I think you've got to make some calls like this where you decide, you know what, I'm going to try, and even if some people don't listen to me, I'm sure some people will. And if I just keep getting better at saying it, then eventually more people will hear it and more people want to say it too, and we'll get some stuff done.
Yeah, I was on the street just yesterday afternoon, beautiful afternoon on my local corner, talking to the 80-year-old Italian woman who's been living in her house for 50 years. And she was telling me about visiting her daughter up at Finch and Steele's. And the difference just between sort of my old school neighborhood with some, it's the old people that really have the connection to the sort of meaning of community. When you get up to Steeles and Finch, it's like the big houses, there's no sidewalks. You have to drive everywhere. It's not conducive to community is what we need, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I think, Shannon, if we rip open the real truth behind all this, it'll be like ripping off a Band-Aid quick and painlessly. That's what I'm trying to do with my campaign. That's why it's such an aggressive message, because I'm like, all right, enough is enough is enough. Because it affects everything. I mean, as you said with that old person, people were more comfortable with who they were, what they could say, more comfortable with hearing different opinions. And these days, it seems we're getting a bit more paranoid about what to say. To the point where we talk about the weather, the most obvious thing in the world, like it's outside. Like, you can't disagree. Like, if I see you, Shannon, you know, here on the way to the station this morning, and I say, hey, it's a nice day, eh? You can say, yeah. And we can go, whew.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't piss you off. I'm glad you didn't piss me off. I'm glad I didn't feel bad. I mean, it's just the paranoia that's engineered by being afraid of what other people have to say, I mean, normal people, is something that a lot of older folks don't have because they were confident in themselves and confident enough to hear anything. And I think more of us in Toronto should feel that way. If it's stupid, laugh at it. If it's smart, enjoy it, appreciate it, maybe even pass it on.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. We were contrasting the old houses and the new houses in the neighborhood. There's these, a new town, row town, sorry. The old houses are row houses. The new houses are townhouses. But the new towns across the street were like, they're worth, you know, 700, 800,000.
And no sidewalks up in Aurora. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it's crazy.
But there's this fear of losing what you have. They seem to have inflated the value or the psychological effect of holding these things. And then they, you know, it's sort of a weird control kind of factor. If you know, we need to get past this stuff and get to, you know, the more important things that that are, you know, right there that nobody really wants to talk about.
Absolutely, man. I mean, people in condos, you know, often don't know each other, talk to each other. You know, people in houses, apartments, and it's the type of thing which we can get past, but not if we're afraid of what each other has to say, and not if we're afraid of the truth. So I'm hoping that we just aren't. And frankly, I think if this is difficult for people to deal with in general, then more men should man up. I'd love to be able to walk into a UFC, a bar in Toronto after a UFC fight and just yell, hey, the big corporations are poisoning us and our kids, and have half the damn bar in a fighting mood run out and say, what? Let's go. So if things like that, UFC, sports, music, if you're sort of, you know, feeling like a tough guy sort of deal is getting you going, then let's go. And let's do it on behalf of all the people that have more trouble doing it, just like men always have for hundreds or thousands of years.
Yeah. Reminds me of when a kid, I used to watch a little football now and again. But it used to give me that feeling of going outside and playing football. And maybe that's what we should be doing, a little more of a physical, you know, not physical, but just getting out there and doing
Instead
it.
Instead of jogging, run around, drop out, drop some flyers, yeah. Put up some posters.
Do
something.
Yeah, man. All right. Do you want to drop those websites again? We're going to take out. We got to get out of here.
Absolutely. Vijay Sarma for mayor. Thank you so much for your interest. WhatYouWantToBelieveIn.com, because I think you want to believe we can get this done.
Yes. Thank you. So it's just around the corner. The next show. We'll be back next week with Plunder News. My name is Shannon. We're signing off for this time slot, CKLN 88.1 FM. And, well, who knows? Maybe we'll get you back one more time.
Thanks, Shannon. It's been a blast.
Yes, thanks again. Have a nice week. And don't forget, vote Vijay Sharma. She won!